Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Thursday, August 25th, and it's a special day because today, of all days, Dalton Del Don joins me to talk about our 49ers. Oh my God, Dalton, our favorite team, bro. This is it. This is what the listeners have been afraid of, probably, given how last offseason went with the 49ers. But this is what I like to think it's what they've been waiting for.
Yeah, just like all these old former quarterbacks, Russell Wilson starting with against the Broncos, and Deshaun Watson happens to face the Texans the first game back. You know, I'm beginning to think it's not a coincidence they put me on this 49ers preview here. So let's do this, Matt.
Yeah, I don't think that is a coincidence at all. We're going to save that fun for the end of the show. For the meat of today's show, though, we're going to talk about I sat down and ranked the new starting quarterbacks across the NFL in terms of how they're going to help their team's pass catchers. We'll get to that a little bit later as well, so because we got to tackle a few pieces of news here, and I would call them rumors, starting with this one. PFF's Doug Kyed reports that the Dolphins have, quote, brought up tight end Mike Gesicki's name to other teams. Dalton, I feel like I wanted to talk about this for a couple of different reasons. First of all, it feels like Mike Gesicki has been like, we just have been doing our fade pieces, like our group pieces, that the guys that were out on this year for the website this week. Whoever got in there and had the Mike Gesicki take first was, like, you know, just taking the layup, because it feels like he's been one of the easiest fades all off season, because we knew he was transitioning to, you know, playing more traditional tight end after being kind of basically a slot receiver. He took like 7% of his snaps in line last year, but more of a wide receiver than Kyle Pitts, by the way. And he basically said as much too after the last preseason game. So it would kind of make sense if he was not, he's not part of this team's plan. I'll get back to that in a second. But in terms of Mike Gesicki, I don't know if he's actually going to end up getting traded, because he's on the franchise tag right now, but I feel like if he went to the right situation, and if you have any of those situations, I'd love to hear it, he'd actually be, he'd suddenly go from a total fade to maybe actually a pretty good fantasy pick at a really tough position.
Yeah, he's a good player, but you're right. Given his situation, he was an obvious fade in fantasy, having to share targets with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Who knows Tua's durability, but mainly his new role, where he's playing far more in line and having to block. That was the main concern with an entirely new coaching staff. But he was still being treated as a, when I wrote my tight ends column, his expert consensus rank was tight end 13. So I'm still being ranked in our community as a borderline starting fantasy tight end. And let me tell you, Harmon, I'm going to cry if Gesicki is traded to the Cowboys. All these donkeys drafting him wrong back then. And me, I've been drafting Dalton Schultz, who is considered a donkey pick by some too, because, you know, a non-athletic guy. I just love the situation. When the bullets start flying in week one, the Cowboys scored the most points in the NFL last year, and Dak Prescott's second read is going to be Dalton Schultz. So I think he's perfect situation fantasy. But if Gesicki goes there, I can light all those six rounders on fire that I used on Schultz. So, and it'd be great for Gesicki. I mean, if light use targets in that, and that would just be like the night and day compared to situation now indoors from Dak. So yeah, Gesicki's an easy fade now, but a trade could quickly change that.
Yeah, Lord Podcast suggested prior to taping, he said it to me, that what about Denver as a spot? Obviously, they're trying to get Albert O kind of worked up there. They're giving him extra reps in the preseason. They lost Tim Patrick, who was basically going to be like their big slot Alan Lazard type. And if any receiver plays like a hybrid tight end-ish role, it's Alan Lazard, which, by the way, took like 4% of his snaps in line last year. It's not that many, but like, that could be a pretty easy transition. That would be an interesting one there. You know, just looking around the NFL, there's certainly spots there where a player of this ilk is needed. What about the Giants? I know that kind of all of their receivers are slot-ish guys. We'll talk about one here in a minute, but that would be a potentially interesting spot. So yeah, Gesicki could be one of those guys that was faded all offseason in best ball drafts, and actually, if he gets traded, would end up being a pretty decent fantasy pick. The other thing I wanted to talk about here, And I wanted to bring this up with you because obviously you're a Niners guy. We're talking about the Niners on the show. I saw Mitchell Schwartz, former NFL offensive tackle, was a stud with the Chiefs and the Browns throughout his career. He said this morning when this report was kind of getting circulated, maybe don't try to make Gesicki into Kittle and he'll be a better fit. There's only one George Kittle. Good luck finding another type for that type of offense. We spent a whole offseason praising the genius of Mike McDaniel, and he can't find a way to properly utilize a pass-catching tight end. Dalton, you said yourself, like, Mike Gesicki's a good player. He's just not a good player in this role. And if we generally think that, okay, good coaches cater to the talent on their roster, they obviously weren't going to be super invested in Gesicki. He was on the franchise tag. And they have two frontline pass catchers in Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Like, no matter what, Gesicki is the third guy in that pecking order. But this is an offense that could still use some guys beyond those two, and they're purposely kind of, whether he's off the roster or not, they're sticking him in a role that isn't right for his talent. Like, they're making him learn a whole new position. Does that, like, kind of make you pause about McDaniel at all as an offensive coach, that he's taking what we think is a good player and almost like not even trying to sort of cater to his ability, but just rather putting him in the role that he needs for his offense?
I'm not sure if it gives me pause. It's frankly, it's just not that surprising. Remember, McDaniel was the run guy. He was the guy that controlled the run game in San Francisco, not the passing attack. And George Kittle isn't going higher in fantasy, not just because of his injury risk, but also his role. He rarely sees end zone targets or red zone targets. I mean, he's been a problem. I mean, Ayuk has lapped him when it comes inside the five targets of the last 2 years. George Kittle, one of the best athletes we've ever seen at the position, is used as a blocker a ton in San Francisco. So it's not a surprise that Miami is going to be asked that position to do so here. And it's pretty odd when a team's franchise player is now losing snaps to Durham Smythe.
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. Obviously, this team wants a guy to be out there and do the run blocking stuff that they need. But at the same time, you're trying to, and you know, Mike McDaniel's now on the Tyreek Hill thing, where he's like out there just fawning all over Tua and all this offseason improvement he's made in the media appearances I've seen recently. You're trying to get the best out of this guy. You've already given him a lot to work with Jaylen Waddle and this staff brought in Tyreek Hill and Chase Edmonds as a pass catcher out of the backfield, all that stuff. But you're about to theoretically take away a great weapon for him. You know, Mike Gesicki is like a good pass catcher. Dylan Smythe can be a better blocker all he wants, but like, he's not as good of a pass catcher as Mike Gesicki. So I don't know, just something that kind of raised a small, like, I'm not gonna call it a red flag, but at least like made me raise
an eyebrow.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the way to say it. So it's not really a take there, but just something to think about, I think, if you're a Dolphins fan or whatever. So we'll see how the season goes. They're still a very fascinating team, and I would love to see Mike Gesicki on another team at this point. We need all the help we can get when it comes to fantasy tight ends. Three just kind of quick housekeeping news notes. ESPN's Jameson Hensley speculates that Mike Davis, quote, could get most of the carries early in the season. We talked about J.K. Dobbins with Edwin Porras on the last podcast yesterday. Definitely make sure to check that out. He's pretty skeptical of Dobbins. Sounds like Mike Davis could have a pretty decent early season role. This one, a little bit surprising. The Giants have activated my guy, Sterling Shepard, from the active PUP list. He had an Achilles injury late last year. I don't know how many snaps he's going to be ready to play, but you know, he could certainly eat into the target distribution here. Kenny Galladay's had a bad offseason. Kadarius Toney's still, you know, been in and out with injuries. Wandale Robinson's kind of taken the slot receiver role, but I think Shepard could potentially play as a flanker here, so keep an eye on that. And the Chiefs placed running back Derek Gore on injured reserve. You'd imagine this kind of just clears the rotation down for the grinder carries to Pacheco and CEH. Dalton, any of those three notes like really kind of pique your interest or make you take a second look at anything?
Quick thought on the Ravens running back situation. Not only is Lamar Jackson a threat to steal goal line carries, but over the last 5 years, he ranks dead last in target rate to running backs at 12.9%, last among all quarterbacks. That's really my only thought. None of this other stuff is that interesting to me. Let's talk about the quarterbacks changing in the Niners. Let's get to the good stuff.
Yeah, Dalton's already mentioned the Niners multiple times here in the intro of the show. So let's get into the first section here.
Is Sterling Shepard going to mess up Wandale Robinson week one, actually? I mean, he goes crazy at the slot. He's, you know, what is there? I know you love Shepard there. Theoretically, the Giants have all kinds of goods on paper, but Tony's always hurt. So I didn't want to dismiss your guy, Shepard. Sorry, it's part of your brand.
No.
So quickly, you can go ahead.
I mean, I don't think Sterling Shepard's going to have a big role, or at least I don't want my... I don't want to set myself up for another round of disappointment, but he is a good player every time he's out there. Like, he
earns targets like crazy.
He earns targets. Daniel Jones loves him because he always gets open, and none of these other guys are really reliable route runners at this stage of their career. I mean, we'll see about Wandale Robinson. He's a rookie coming in the NFL, but I would keep an eye on Shepard, but probably the strong bet is that he is fourth in terms of snaps at best for this team in the early part of the season. That's the thing. I just wonder, like, long term, this staff didn't sign Kenny Golladay to that big dumbass contract, like, and he's clearly been kind of a disappointment so far in New York. Might he take? Might they, you know, move? I just don't know who would play X if Kenny Golladay's not out there. But I don't want to spend a bunch. You're right. I don't want to spend a bunch of time talking about the damn Giants receivers. Like, let's get into what we really want to talk about here, which is these quarterbacks. So, I said this to Frank a couple of episodes ago that at the time we recorded the podcast, 19 of the top 40 receivers in Yahoo ADP were going to be playing with a new quarterback this year, whether that was by wide receiver trade or quarterback movement. We have 9 new starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So what I did is I went in and ranked these guys in order of best, like, good news for the guys on the roster that these quarterbacks were brought into, maybe not so good news, 1 to 9 here. Starting, I think, there's a clear tier of one here, Dalton, and it's Russell Wilson up at the top. We know he's a huge benefit for these Denver pass catchers. Although the longer that Russ has been there, it actually kind of feels like the target distribution here has narrowed out at this point, because Albert O is not going to have the role that most thought, at least early in the season. I'm not totally giving up on him, but at least early in the year, he's not going to have the role that many hoped for. And obviously Tim Patrick is out for the season. KJ Hamler isn't even taking a part of team drills yet. So this is really kind of the Sutton and Judy show for Russ. And I think that's a big win for both.
A few things. Let's say Russell Wilson's fantasy value himself. He's going to be 34 years old this year. And at least as I understand it from people locally who follow Seattle, he was traded in part because he just refused to run RPO last season. I mean, you can look at his rushing stats, but it was more to it. I just think he's the guy who's looked at his career and decided, made a conscious decision to stop running. So that is going to limit his upside a bit. That said, his YPA was, I believe he was leading the league in YPA before the finger injury. He played through that mallet injury that's serious. So he could still be one of the league's best passers at this stage of his career. That's why people were drafting Sutton insanely high. I included a bust for every team article coming up today when you hear this. And I included Sutton there, and I said, Before Tim Patrick went down, he was one of the most egregious looking picks I've seen in a while. Now he's just every day a little bit overvalued, but being drafted as a top 20 fantasy pick last year in 10 games when Judy, Patrick, and Sutton played together, Sutton averaged 3.8 targets compared to 5 for Patrick and 5.6 for Judy. In 10 games, he was averaging just 3.8 targets. Put differently, his PPR scoring, he was the wide receiver 13 without Judy, wide receiver 152. With him, the yards per target it dropped from 2.1 to 0.48 when Judy was on the field. This is with Judy playing with a high ankle sprain, mind you. I get it now that there's Russell Wilson there, but just so we're clear, 83% of Sutton's fantasy points came with Judy off the field last year. So all those people drafting him were saved so much when Tim Patrick got hurt. I mean, they were just so saved. But he did get hurt. He's out for the year now. So Sutton could smash, be a top 20 fantasy wideout, definitely within his range of possibilities. Just realize that if you look at BetMGM's odds, Jerry Jeudy has a higher over-under in receptions, yardage, and touchdowns. Yet Sutton's going ahead of him in every draft. I get that there's buzz out there that there's a good connection with Russell and Sutton. Have you mentioned before or that Russell Wilson is a different type of quarterback too? So very interesting. You got to obviously add a huge upgrade to both those guys, despite me saying that Sutton's being drafted a little too high. But yeah, that's my thoughts for the receivers. And real quickly, I heard a great comment that put the Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon situation into perspective. What if your employer asked you to go from $8.5 million to $2.5 million pay cut, would you expect to have the same role that next year? Because that's what happened with the Melvin Gordon situation in Denver.
That is a really good way of putting it. That makes a ton of sense. And, you know, same staff there. So that lines up to me. I love that you brought up just the whole point about Russ's exit from Seattle. Obviously, I think there was some tension between him and Pete Carroll and just like philosophical differences and stuff like that. You know, he's I say this all the time, he's a great quarterback, obviously, but he's a specific type of quarterback. And I'm not 100% convinced that Russ really believes that. Like, if you hear him talk, like, he wants to be regarded as like a Drew Brees type of quarterback, you know, but he's just not that guy. That said, they always churn out good offenses in Seattle with him there. Like, regardless of what you think about, you know, how often they're running the ball, the run pass ratios, all that stuff, you can take notes of that. But like, even last year, in a year where Russ didn't play his best ball, was hurt, Seattle was seventh in offensive DVOA. Like, they are still they consistently turn out good offenses. And I think that is mostly a Russell Wilson thing. I think the Denver Broncos will be a good offense. But to your point about Cortland Sutton, yeah, he just didn't play that well last year, I don't think. He was getting a ton of targets when all the other guys were hurt. But I think narrowing down the target tree to Sutton and Jeudy makes them both passable picks. Because I think you could also argue that folks that were drafting Jerry Jeudy really high were kind of saved by the Tim Patrick injury too. Because like, Jeudy was average last year while playing through a high ankle sprain, admittedly. But he hasn't quite put it together. There's been some off-the-field stuff with Jerry Jeudy. We know that happened earlier this year too. So I think that both of these guys are good. I think Russell's good at his ADP. I do still kind of stand by my take, though, which is almost like a half-hedge take, because if it doesn't happen, I can, you know, quickly back out of it. That there's a small part of me that thinks we could be getting here around like week 6 and 7 with the Denver Broncos and like, oh, this is really like not that great, because these receivers were kind of overhyped based on their draft pedigree, stuff like that. And Russell is not quite molded yet with Nathaniel Hackett, and they're still trying to figure that relationship out.
Couple quick things. It's a great point about Jeudy. Drafters were possibly saved as well. If you look at receivers from his class in end zone targets, he's laughably like, it's like not even top 20 or something. My guy Gabe Davis is like second, by the way. but Russell Wilson is perennially among the league leaders. He and Brady and Allen just throw the ball in the end zone more than all the other quarterbacks. So here I have a question for you here. Looking at going over that data, Fantasy Points is a great column, just saying the last 5 years, the target rate for every quarterback in the league. And Russell Wilson ranks fourth and basically third in slot rate, targeting the slot receiver. So isn't that more of a Jeudy role also, or am I off base on that?
Well, I think the Patrick injury kind of messes that up, right? Because I had thought, and you know, the reports from Robert Mays and a few others were that Tim Patrick was going to kind of be their big slot receiver, because they want some oomph there, this offensive system, Nathaniel Hackett as the slot receiver. With him injured, like, the other guy, like, we should talk about the fact that the other receivers on this roster, if KJ Hamler's not ready to rock yet, and he's coming back from a serious injury, and he's mostly been doing individual drills.
And
so
Albert
far.
O, like, if you look at the history of tight ends who played in the fourth quarter of preseason games, it does not look good. And he's been my sleeper all offseason. I mean, it looks brutal. I don't know what they're doing with him, but yeah, they don't like him.
Well, they said he needs more reps. And then other folks say that they want Greg Dulcich, the tight end they drafted this year, to be that guy too. So there's a chance that Dulcich ends up becoming like the big slot receiver move tight end of this offense. Totally plausible. I don't know how that situation is going to shake out. I think by week 5, we could see Albert O like in a full-time role. I think it's kind of a stretch to think that Dulcich, who's not been healthy all offseason either, is ready to go. What I keep coming back to with the Broncos is that there's a lot more questions here than people kind of make it out to be. And like, it is a question of where Jerry Jeudy is going to play, because I think he should be more of a flanker receiver. I don't want to see him like a vertical guy that's winning on the outside. I don't want to see him doing those stupid little slot route stuff, because it's just not really like, he's a fine zone beater, but you really want him out there running routes and separating its man coverage on the outside, because I think that's what he was good at coming into the NFL. But I think the previous Denver staff was a little weird about moving him around too much, like, based on, it's the same thing with a guy like CeeDee Lamb, where I said that Dallas needs to figure out the role they want for CeeDee Lamb and leave him there, not like move him around based on who else is injured and stuff like that. I think the same thing is kind of true with Jerry Jeudy, although I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because like, his role might change now with Tim Patrick there. So,
and don't forget, suffering a high ankle sprain week 1. It's easy to say it and then move on, carry on. But no, really, he was probably playing at whatever percentage, very not close to 100% for the entire last season.
Yeah, his rookie year in reception perception, Jeudy was at 75% success rate versus man. Like, historically, the guys that hit that mark go on, other than Sterling Shepard, who we talked about earlier, but he's a good player. He just gets hurt all the time. Those guys go on to find extreme career success. Like, there's not a lot of failures. I mean, there's no like true failures that have hit that mark. There's been guys like Curtis Samuel who've been off and on, but for the most part, that's a really good indicator. And then he went all the way down to 68%, which is, you know, just above the league average. So I think that's the drop off there is because of injury, that I think as well. So no, I think to your point here, I want to do an episode at some point, probably next week, like guys, teammates who are going after their teammates that could outscore the other guy.
Yeah.
I think Judy kind of fits into this. Like, I wouldn't be you if we wake up and Judy has been the better fantasy receiver than Courtland Sutton, despite every beat writer saying Sutton is the guy. I don't think we can really be surprised by that.
I personally have Judy ranked higher. Yeah, and we'll get to the whole, and I think Ayuk and Debo have a good chance of flipping too, more than, definitely more than the ADP suggests between the two Broncos receivers, but we'll get to them later. So who's the next QB?
Number two for me is Trey Lance, but we're going to skip Trey Lance and talk about him in the Niners section. We went long on Russ because, by the way, like he's the clear-cut tier one these guys here. So I promise I won't spend, you know, freaking 15 minutes talking about Geno Smith when we get to that point. Number three for me, though, is Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan is a huge upgrade on Carson Wentz. They're really excited about Matt Ryan in Indianapolis. You know, I think mostly because they got super lucky that this Matt Ryan thing even became available to them, even became an option to them. But they're kind of expecting him to be, based on what I've read and heard, they're expecting him to be sort of what they got out of Phillip Rivers a few years ago, but with a little more arm strength to be able to throw outside, a little more even mobility there too, like a willingness to go under center and do play action and all that stuff. I just really, the longer I think about this Matt Ryan thing, the more I think this is a huge win for the Colts. We know it's a huge win for Michael Pittman, Dalton, but there's some, it's getting to the point where I'm getting really intrigued by some of the guys lower on the depth chart as well.
Yeah, Pittman's my wide receiver seven. Paris Campbell, I've been drafting everywhere. Yeah, a big upgrade. Look at the on-target rates last year. Wentz was bottom three. Ryan was top 10. He was top five when pressured. Just a big upgrade in accuracy here. Not downfield, though, it should be noted, as we'll get to later. Looking at like Mariota, I mean, maybe the difference in QBs will help Pitts there. But he'll benefit from a ton of play action. I think Carson Wentz was like top four in that last year. So very good environment. Remains indoors. Really good receivers that have been upgraded from the quarterback. So nice. Maybe Matt Ryan, not the greatest fantasy QB, but really helps everyone there, you know, everyone else there involved.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You're not drafting Matt Ryan in fantasy unless you're in a super flex format or two QB. But even guys that you didn't mention, like Mo'Ali Cox at tight end, I think is worth keeping an eye on. It sounds like he's ready to take on some of like Jack Doyle's old routes there, which is basically the shorter high percentage routes, while also still being involved in the downfield game from a tight end perspective. And Alec Pierce, man, I don't know that Alec Pierce is going to be a guy that is out there week one playing 80% of the snaps or anything like that, but it sounds like they're really excited about him. And, you know, Michael Pittman is a guy who wins on those intermediate routes more than people. Like, people don't understand that Michael Pittman is like a legit number one receiver that can run every route and separate all levels because he played with Carson Wentz last year. And Wentz is just so different of a type of quarterback. But, man, he can do it all. And then I think that leaves Alec Pierce to be the vertical outside receiver, the X receiver who gets off press coverage. I talked about him with Andy a couple episodes ago as I compared him to the bad evaluations of DK Metcalf. Slants, post, and goes, baby. That's the Alec Pierce route portfolio. So I think Matt Ryan definitely, I felt really good about putting him as the third player here. Number four for me, went back and forth between Baker Mayfield and Carson Wentz. I landed on Baker Mayfield at four and felt pretty good about that. Mayfield officially named the Panthers starter earlier this week. He's a league average quarterback, Dalton, but league average quarterback play for the Carolina Panthers, that's a lot better than what they've gotten the last few years.
Alec Pierce, by the way, definitely agree. He's been impressing, and he's surpassed Campbell. It's happened in the last week in ADP. You'll have to draft him ahead of him, which I get, Campbell, with the injury history. Baker Mayfield, I've mentioned on this pod before, but 20 of 60 career games have occurred in windy conditions. Last year, he played with a torn labrum, non-throwing shoulder, but still. I like the fact that he easily surpassed Sam Darnold. Remember when there was a thought, like it's going to be briefly a thought, there's a battle. I mean, that happened in about 2 days. so I moved DJ Moore as my wide receiver eight I am.
Wow, all in. Let's go.
Absolutely love him, and it's more confident in McCaffrey too. So I think it's a big upgrade from probably the worst starting quarterback situation in the league to league average. That is a gigantic upgrade. So yeah, I'm in on Mayfield and the Panthers. I want to see DJ Moore and CMC combined for 300 targets this year. Let's see it. Bring it.
Honestly, it's possible, right? I love that you have DJ Moore ranked that aggressively, because I feel like I have him at wide receiver 12, and I feel like I'm out a little bit on an island there. As usual, Dalton Dell Flamethrower out even farther on the ledge. We love to see that. Look, DJ Moore, I think, is a really good player. I still wish they'd use him a little more creatively. I don't love how this Panthers coaching staff has just kind of stuck him out at the X receiver position. I'm never going to love that, but he's still good enough to win there. Would love to see him in, a Deebo Samuel type of role, not necessarily getting the carry, stuff like that, but, you know, winning on intermediate routes, getting moved around the formation, stuff like that. But they don't really use him that way. But nevertheless, I think that, like, Odell Beckham's game and Baker Mayfield's game were never really going to overlap. I do think there's a really clear overlap here for DJ Moore. So I'm drafting him aggressively. Dalton, all we're asking for is like freaking 6 to 8 touchdowns for DJ Moore. And I think if he gets the target volume that he did last year, I think that's well within the range of outcomes.
Yeah, it's just been, touchdowns are a big thing. And it hasn't been just fluky, horrible luck. The guy was not targeted in the red zone at all. And I get he's not huge. So yeah, hopefully there's a fundamental change there. And I can't argue with you that there is a concern with the coaching staff in Carolina.
Yeah, definitely a concern. And by the way, it sounds like I was reading in the Athletic that, you know, this is no surprise too. Here's another one of like the guys I will stand every single year, mostly just for the bit. But Rashard Higgins, you know, is a pretty good player. He was signed to this team before they traded for Baker Mayfield. No surprise, those two guys have connected pretty well. It sounds like, number one, that Rashard Higgins is probably going to play ahead of Terrace Marshall, who was terrible last year. Very Jalen Reagor-esque in terms of separating and getting open, which is not what you want to hear. So it sounds like he's surpassed Marshall, but there's a chance he might even eat into Robbie Anderson's targets. I know that, like, you're not, if Robbie Anderson continues to play poorly like he did last year. So just keep an eye on that. I'm not telling you to draft Rashard Higgins. I'm not trying to go out and be the Higgins stand, but it does sound like the main point there is, like, it's going to be McCaffrey and it's going to be DJ Moore. And really, you can just kind of log out after that.
Fair.
All right. Number five for me, this is where it starts to get a little murky. I feel really good about that top, and I feel good about having Carson Wentz at five, but we know the deal with Carson Wentz, man. You know, the inaccuracy, the volatility in his play, that's always going to be a part of the Carson Wentz experience. But that said, I've said it many times in this podcast, I do really like the pass catchers on this team. Logan Thomas activated, Lynchburg, Virginia, the pride of Lynchburg, Virginia, Logan Thomas activated from the PUP list. Would love to see him get back out there and rock and rolling at some point. But, you know, Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel, that's a good receiver core. Thomas mixing in at some point. We need someone to elevate these guys. I don't know how much Wentz elevates them, but I'm still really, really in on drafting these receivers where they go.
Yeah, I have been down on McLaurin because of Wentz's inaccuracy, but maybe I'm too harsh. You know, last year he was like the 16th fantasy QB in points per game. But, you know, he also, like I said, benefited from a ton of play action, a pretty good offensive line, and playing indoors. Now he's outdoors on another team. Hasn't been great buzz about his ability to throw the football this summer. Honestly, this may sound like a craziest, boldest prediction, but it would not shock me if Sam Howell, the rookie, emerges as that team's best quarterback this season. That's why I think it's scary to draft Terry in fantasy leagues. He's like a top 20 fantasy wideout, and I think he's still going to have problems with the quarterback position, especially with Jahan Dotson. As you said, he's reportedly shown the most chemistry too with Wentz. So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess they're going from one bad quarterback to another, but maybe Wentz is able to help elevate some fantasy values despite being inaccurate.
Jahan Dotson, of course, he's shown the best chemistry with Carson Wentz because Jahan Dotson is an expert at playing with bad quarterbacks. So that's, I mean, obviously Terry McLaurin's done it as well, but you watch some of the Penn State, ooh boy, yeah, that guy can track some inaccurately thrown footballs. Will Jahan Dotson? I love Jahan Dotson as a player. Obviously, I'm in on McLaurin and Samuel too. The last point I'll make, if this is a power ranking of the guys who are going to help their teammates the most, I will say, and this is not to excuse Washington, you know, I think kind of overpaying for Carson Wentz. But I think the reason that they went out and made this pretty aggressive move, to an early move to get Carson Wentz, was because, like you said, they're going from bad quarterback to bad quarterback. No shade to ODU's finest, Taylor Heinicke, but the guy was a backup quarterback in the XFL, Dalton. Like, I know he's had some moments in the NFL, but he's got, like, I mean, he just doesn't have an NFL arm, period. So I do think going from a barely NFL level player to a functional but not great NFL quarterback in Carson Wentz is good news for this offense. But I'm ready to be just slaughtered by the hope that I have here.
Yeah. I, like, Terry McLaurin has ended up on none of my teams, but I hope I'm wrong, because I love the real life player, man, and he deserves better.
Yeah, deserves better is definitely the way to put it. All right, Dalton and I are going to take a quick break. We're going to round out this quarterback list when we come back before getting into our Niners. All right, number six for me, I've got the combination of Kenny Pickett slash Mitch Trubisky, which I don't know. This might be aggressive to have these guys at six, but let me tell you what, the three guys after them, not great either. Dalton, I said it on the show with Andy a couple episodes ago. I'm officially on team just start Kenny Pickett at this point. Like, let's not be messing around with Mitch Trubisky. Where do you fall on this?
Couple things. I may have buried Kenny Pickett too much. I didn't love him as a prospect, and I may have admittedly fallen for some Pittsburgh beat writers who had, you know, an agenda, because he certainly looked a lot better once the real, you know, not real games, but in preseason, aside from practice. Maybe I fell for the small hands narrative too. I also wanted to correct myself on a Trubisky stat. I talked here about the fact how David Montgomery would saw less targets when he was quarterbacking back in Chicago. Well, this quarterback positional targets article that I spoke about, Trubisky's actually targeted running backs the second most, behind only Tom Brady, running backs over the last 5 years. So that's great news for Najee Harris. Although the emergence of Jalen Warren and the fact that offense could still stink and a lesser workload, those issues still remain. Deontay Johnson has these big splits, target rate with Big Ben on off the field, very small sample. So I'm curious how that works with, and now we have to worry about two quarterbacks, maybe even three in Pittsburgh.
I don't think we see Mason Rudolph. Now that Pickett's, I think, at least moved himself into the competition with Trubisky, I think we can put the Mason Rudolph, I hope we could put the Mason Rudolph thing to bed.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if Deontay Johnson's still, you know, a target hog, and how George Pickens does. He looks like he could be a fantasy difference maker immediately. And now Claypool, you know, as the big slot, maybe he can go back to maybe not a lot of catches, but back to a lot of touchdowns. But could these quarterbacks, even if Pickett does have a bright future, he's likely to struggle year one regardless. So it's not a great situation, but it can't be emphasized enough just how bad the version of Big Ben was the final 2 years. I mean, his YPA was probably the last in the NFL.
Yeah, 100%. It was a rough watch there with Big Ben. Good God. I'm glad we don't have to see that anymore. I will say Kenny Pickett is getting the ball out quick. He's like really kind of moving the offense from a tempo perspective. So if you are drafting Deontay Johnson, and I've got him at wide receiver 18, which is, you know, depending on the format, just below or right around his consensus ranking, I think that you probably want Pickett out there, because I think Deontay Johnson can win at all levels. Like, if they asked him to, you know, be a vertical threat, he could do that. But the base of his game, where he's so great, is earning that quick separation, is being the first guy open on the route. And I think that will fit in really well with Kenny Pickett. And I'm definitely, whoever these guys are, like Mitch Trubisky, Kenny Pickett, whatever, I think they fit George Pickens, because George Pickens is the type of quarterback proof receiver in some way. So I'm open to these guys kind of helping out these receivers, because Big Ben was just so dreadful. And it's, I know some Steelers fans can't bear to hear it. It just is what it is, though. It's not even necessarily that Big Ben was cooked from an arm strength perspective. It's that he just refused to do things like have the team do a lot of motion. He refused to go under center and run play action, like turn his back to the defense at all. You've even could see it watching preseason. I'm not sure it's like going to be the best offense in the world, but like Matt Canada's got like double jet motion going on in these preseason games. So I think he's excited to work with one of these younger quarterbacks. And Pickett, from a fantasy perspective, he can move a little bit. You know, he's not like a pure pocket passer statue type guy. So he could bring some decent fantasy value in an offense that I think is underrated.
Let's talk Atlanta next, man. You're underrating my guy Marcus Mariota. No, maybe not the update.
No, yeah,
part,
but... let's talk Mariota, because Mariota's looked awesome in the preseason. And I could see. I mean, would you put Mariota ahead of you put him ahead of the Steelers guys? It sounds like, would you put him ahead of Wentz on this list?
So, well, we're talking about two different things. Real life up. First of all, it's actually, I've come to the conclusion, this is a big upgrade for Kyle Pitts. I mean, you look at the air yards version of Matt Ryan attempts 15 plus air yards versus both Mariota's career rates and their preseason rates. It's jumping 10% on all the 10 plus, yeah. 15 plus, 20 plus. And we all saw that highlight of Pitts the other day, just toasting the DB. So, I mean, Pitts is definitely getting drafted based on some projection there coming off last year, but I'm in. Mariota, former number two overall pick, 7.5 career YPA. He can still run. He ran in a TD from the 6-yard line the preseason game. And as you said, he looks good. Maybe year two, Arthur Smith is smarter. He has Pitts moving around more at coach. Drake London there, a couple decent receivers. They'll be playing from behind, if you like that narrative, indoors. There's definitely a strong chance Desmond Ridder is starting during the fantasy playoffs. But in my sleeper column, I said Mariota absolutely can be a top 12 fantasy QB in the meantime until they turn to the rookie. I think he really can be a QB1 in fantasy purposes, wow, given his situation and the fact and his running. That's just the cheat code, and there's one. Maybe if I'm exaggerating, it's only top 15, but he's right there with Daniel Jones, only indoors. As the type of guy who could no one wants, but when he's on the field this year, again, he probably will not be there when it matters most for fantasy when they turn to the rookie. But I think in the meantime, he's absolutely one of the best super flex sleepers.
Yeah, Ritter's looked good in the preseason too.
Yes, he has too. Yeah.
I will say this about Mariota, man. Seeing his kind of spot starts, like little moments he had with the Raiders, and then in this preseason,
he blew up.
Yeah, I kind of think that Mariota's had a little bit of a career epiphany. Do you remember like the last few years with the Titans? He was so gun shy.
He took the longest to throw and threw like the shortest or so. He was like a horrible combo. It was horrific. Yeah. Yeah.
He had like lost his nerve as a quarterback, and he'd always been a little bit of a robotic guy, but I know this is totally narrative based, not based in any sort of statistical analysis, but I feel like watching Mariota the last, like with the Raiders and then in this preseason, he's kind of got a little bit of like a it type of mode with to him right now, which I think is good, and I think could be good in this offense too. Pitts is a matchup nightmare. We know that. I'd still say, and I know this is, and this is not just because I don't want to chart him, okay, as a wide receiver. I want to see Pitts play more like sort of traditional tight end stuff as opposed to X receiver, because I think he'll be more of a matchup nightmare there, and he'll be harder to defend in that sort of role. Drake London, I think he'll get back out there. And like, I think Mariota, if he's slinging it downfield, like Drake London's the guy you sling it downfield to as well, in addition to being a really good separator on those short routes. So I kind of think, like, I don't know, man, I'm buying what you're selling on Mariota here from a fantasy perspective, but also as a guy that could really pump a lot of targets to these two guys. And I think it's mostly going to be them. And that's it. Like, they're talking about Kadarius Hodge might start for this team. So it's going to be those two guys in fantasy for sure.
First of all, I love that suddenly both Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota are starting in the NFL entering the season.
Very weird.
You saw the Hard Knocks when it says starting quarterback Marcus Mariota and Aiden Hutchinson's sisters looked at each other like, Mariota? He's still in the league? That was pretty funny. And one other narrative street I want to go down here in Atlanta. They don't have a running back on the roster either. I mean,
yeah.
Patterson is over 30 years old and got like 2 yards per carry over the final month last year. So, I mean, Algier was drafted very late. So, I mean, Mariota could get a handful of rushing scores too at the goal line. So yeah, count me in.
Yeah. Patterson too, I think, is still undervalued as a running back. Like he goes like 40 something at different times. He's going to have a bigger role than that.
He's 30 and a half years old. He totally wore down last year, man. I love the story last year, and he helped me in one of my big survivor weeks, but I'll forever love the GOAT Patterson, but he was the best player in the field that day. When I had to take it, it was a pick'em, so I had him in the big $6 million survivor. But I agree with his fall in drafts this year.
I've never seen Dalton look more like he wants to throw up after something I've said on the podcast and the grimace he just made when I talked about Cordero Patterson. So we'll move right along to the very, as I've called it, unserious quarterback situation that the Seahawks are dealing with. Pete Carroll this week has said they're going to take all the time, you know, they need to make this quarterback decision. I think Geno Smith is starting at least the beginning of the season. Drew Lock missed some time with COVID, was sick. Geno has been the guy taking most of the first team reps pretty much all off season. So I'm expecting Geno, and I've got him second to last, you know, on this list of new starting quarterbacks here. It's not good news for Lockett and Metcalf. That's for sure.
Yeah, there's also, I think Warren Sharp put it out, there's a highlights of Drew Lock's 10 deepest thrown pass attempts last year, and it's almost, it should have a Benny Hill comedy.
I'm not watching that, I'll tell you what.
In the background. But so Metcalf has seen his air yards per game cut in half and his target share fall below Tyler Lockett when Geno Smith has been his quarterback. Yeah. Other than that, the play was great. But he also just lost a quarterback who's been the league leader in end zone targets since, I believe DK Metcalf leads the league in end zone targets since entering the league. So lost the downgrade from Russell Wilson to Geno Smith or Drew Lock is massive. And I have Metcalf and Lockett on zero of my fantasy teams. Although Lockett admittedly is free falling so far in some, he's almost become a value.
I've got Lockett on some teams. I mean, talk about like the guys that I love Tyler Lockett, the player. And I mean, you said it, like the target share was there for Lockett when Geno Smith was starting. Obviously the fantasy results were there for Metcalf because he scored a couple, that like one huge touchdown against the Saints, with Marshawn Lattimore in coverage. There was a few other like bigger plays there, but if you're doing like the process play, like Lockett was the guy that Geno Smith really, and I think that's kind of goes against the narrative of, oh, Russell Wilson and Lockett's chemistry, that's what has really made Tyler Lockett. But I mean, these guys are both great players. Like the gap shouldn't be as big. I have drafted DK Metcalf zero times and I have drafted Tyler Lockett a couple of times.
And so I guess Fant is being used sparsely. So it might just be such a concentrated wide receiver group with banged up backs. I mean, if Walker's already sidelined indefinitely and my guy Penny, yeah, I mean, that could turn into a target for Lockett and Metcalf just out of necessity. They've run so few plays compared to the rest of the league, but if you're playing from behind from the right when you get off the bus, that may have to change that.
Yeah, last year they were insanely low in plays run, but I they might be a little higher this year. We'll see. Last guy here, it's Jacoby Brissett's, you know, sort of slash Deshaun Watson. I mean, Watson's gonna be out for 11 games. We talked about this a few podcasts ago, Dalton. I don't even want to really consider Watson when I'm thinking about like Amari Cooper and some of these other pass catchers. It sounds like, though, that nobody from a wide receiver perspective has been impressing in training camp aside from Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper's never been a target dominator, and Jacoby Brissett's never been a guy that's like elevated wide receivers before. He has shown some decent enough chemistry with tight ends during his time with the Colts. So I'm interested there from that angle, from like a David Njoku side of it. I've been proactively drafting David Njoku whenever I don't take like one of the top nine tight ends, which I'd really rather do than wait on the position. So for me, I think that's it though. Like I still don't want to draft Amari Cooper where he goes.
Yeah, it's wild that Amari Cooper has never exceeded a 22% target share throughout his career. Now he goes outdoors and has Brissett throwing through him the first 11 games. No thanks. My big takeaway with Brissett, my target rate quarterback article. Brissett number three behind only Lamar Jackson and Carson Wentz in target rates to tight ends over the last 5 years. So, yep, wheels up for Njoku, whom I have ranked as a borderline top 12 fantasy. I think he's number 13, but I can move him ahead of Smith easily. So a borderline starting fantasy tight end. Agree with you there. And boy, Lamar Jackson easily leads that category, by the way. So whether it's Huntley or Jackson with no Marquise Brown there, I cannot see taking Travis Kelce over Mark Andrews.
Yeah, I made the switch to have Mark Andrews tight end one, and I think this Isaiah Likely hype from the preseason is interesting. Not that he's going to take away from Mark Andrews or Rashad Bateman. They need a third option there.
100%.
So Isaiah Likely, keep your eye on that. We know the Ravens are going to run a lot of tight ends. That's how uninteresting this Browns thing is that we just started talking about their division rival Ravens. So let's move on. I think that's a clear signal. We don't need to talk about the Browns anymore.
Third and three. We'll see a pick of some kind on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking. Throwing in the end zone. Clark caught it. Dwight Clark.
So let's move on to our Niners, the team preview that we've all been waiting for. All right, Dalton. I said I had Trey Lance number two in terms of guys that are going to elevate his teammates. I firmly believe that, at least from you know, the passing volume might not be there, right, with Trey Lance, but I just want to set the table with this, Dalton, that there's been a lot of panic about, you know, Trey Lance's accuracy, you know, what's he been doing in practice. I think that we need to bake into the range of outcomes for all the pass catchers and for Trey Lance that Trey Lance just might come out there and be really, really good, because this offense is a system that's brought like layups to quarterbacks throughout the entire course of the Kyle Shanahan, you know, even back to Mike Shanahan run. They're going to give Trey Lance the layups from a system perspective. I think he'll take them when they're there, but he'll also bring deep shots to this team as well. So I just think that this Trey Lance thing could actually like work out really well. You know, there was panic about Lamar Jackson. There was panic about Josh Allen, you know, all of these guys. And they, and you know, even, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, there wasn't as much panic about per se, because the Chiefs at least were like, we love Patrick Mahomes. And like, and he's lighting it up in practice. Everybody that watched him in practice, like, knew he was awesome. Even if there was a couple reports about he's been throwing interceptions, that type of stuff. So I don't want to say like that, you know, Trey Lance is going to become those guys. I don't think he's going to become Patrick Mahomes and like win the MVP in his second season or something like that. But there's a chance that he's just way better than people think.
Okay. So yeah, so there are some up and down practice reports with Trey Lance as a 49ers fan, which we need to establish here first. I'm a homer. I'm choosing to believe it's because of their defense, which looks really, really strong on paper this year. So I bet on him in Vegas 50-1 to win the MVP. It's an MVP. It's a quarterback award. All of the last winners have been been quarterbacks of teams with the top two seeds in the league. And a lot of them, by half of those six winners have been odds 30-1 or greater. And he's taken over a team that led the league in yards per play last year, had a 10-point lead in the NFC Championship game, and you know, had Nick Mullins has the second most passing yards in NFL history over his first 16 games because of this situation and this coaching staff. And now imagine if Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle all stay healthy. So, there's a real chance that Lance is immediately good, both in fantasy, by the way, because he just runs so much. I mean, he led all quarterbacks in scrambles per dropback last year. And in real life, there's definitely going to be some mistakes. Do you know that he has three starts since 2019?
Yep.
Three starts.
It's wild.
I mean, it's almost 2023 right now. I mean, he's the seventh youngest starting quarterback ever. But regardless, one thing is clear. This will be a different offense under Trey Lance compared to Jimmy Garoppolo. 45% of Lance's throws have traveled 10 yards or more beyond line of scrimmage. Just 32% of Garoppolo's did that. Deep throws at 20 yards or deeper, 10% more for Lance. So big, big difference there. It's really, I mean, Ayuk not only worked with him all offseason when Debo was holding out for the contract, but I mean, it's just also the area of the field in which Ayuk runs his routes far more than Debo Samuel. So there will be, and one other thing about Trey Lance and is how is he going to change the 49ers? While he is definitely a threat to take goal line touchdowns, overall Niners running backs had 5.2 yards per carry last year with Lance at quarterback. I mean, he is going to create gape. It's going to part like the sea with that threat back there. And in this Shanahan, the holes are just going to be wide open for whomever that running back is with Lance as the dual threat. Now calling Hike. A couple things real quick. Not only is he inexperienced, but he in his barely playing last year, he suffered a knee sprain and he broke his finger. So maybe he turns out to be injury prone as well. But also, everyone made fun of his, I'm not sure he throws a perfect spiral, but it absolutely cannot be underrated. I know it's an excuse, but it cannot be underlooked that the dude had to change his entire throwing motion while dealing with this crazy broken finger that it like rolled up on his knuckle and it just changes mechanics. And that's what led to these dead arm rumors during the offseason. But anyway, as you see behind me, I have a commissioned art of Trey Lance.
Yes.
And I'm wearing his shirt, the Trey area. I'm a big believer if you haven't got that by now.
Yeah. And I'm in the bag too. As soon as they took Trey Lance, I was like, this is wheels up for this offense. And obviously it didn't. I was expected to happen more as a rookie than it did. I think they were clearly their plan all along, as long as they were in contention, was to start Jimmy G all year. I really think they wanted this to be a Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes type situation. Now they didn't execute the second part of that very well, where Washington traded a boatload of picks for Alex Smith to get him from the Kansas City Chiefs. So that part
just to cut you off real quick, Shanahan has admitted that he was looking into turning to Lance, even with the injury last year when they were looked out of the playoffs. They were one loss away from basically being done, and they went on a run and they just kept winning. So that, I mean, that's what happened there. There was absolutely 1 week away from possibly Lance playing the final half of last year.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm saying. Like, as long as they were in contention, they were going to keep playing the veteran, the guy that they knew and were familiar with. But, you know, the plan was all along to make this Trey Lance's team. And it is Trey Lance's team now. That's been clear. They've made that clear all offseason. And, man, I agree with you that it's obviously from a fantasy angle, he's going to, you know, run the hell out of the ball, and that's going to be great. But they're opening different areas of the field that were just never available under the Jimmy Garoppolo offense. I mean, even like, we're big Brandon Ayuk guys. He didn't even have his big games as a rookie with Jimmy Garoppolo there, really. It was with some of these backup quarterbacks and stuff like that. So it's just a transformative effect, I think, for the entire offense. It's obviously for Ayuk. We'll talk about the pass catchers specifically in a second, but for the entire offense, like, they're going to be different things are going to be available that never were going to be with Jimmy Garoppolo. And the rushing part of it is well taken. We typically see running backs be more efficient with mobile quarterbacks, at least from a yards per carry standpoint. So that's not to be expected. I'm not drafting any of these running backs where they're going. I mean, I'm fine taking late round flyers on like Trey Sermon or Jeff Wilson or whatever, but really not that into Elijah Mitchell where he goes necessarily. But yeah, I mean, Trey Lance. All right. So bottom line, where do you have Trey Lance ranked in fantasy?
Oh boy. I was going to talk the running back situation. You will just laugh at me. I have him as my QB5 right now. but man, honestly, I've been in drafts where I've taken him over Lamar Jackson. I can't help myself. He's basically my QB2.
You monster.
He's basically my QB2 in all honesty. I'm drafting him basically if Josh Allen's off the board, I'm looking to Lance. Because I kept taking Hurts, and I've realized that if I make that decision, I'm not going, you know, you're not going to go double up that early. So I got to make the decision, and I've just been going all in on Lance. And again, injury prone, zero history. I'm a crazy person. Don't listen to me there. But I do have a little bit of thoughts on the backfield situation.
Okay, yeah.
Backfield.
Let's,
okay. All
right. Go for it.
Okay. Reasons not to draft Elijah Mitchell include long list of injuries, not being targeted much in the passing game, and Trey Lance maybe stealing some rushing TDs. But I see a lot of bad reasons to avoid him, like a crowded backfield. They have a lot of bodies, but Mitchell is the clear number one when healthy there, believe me. And I even hear people being like, Debo, they do like Debo. It does not matter that some targets to Debo Samuel turn into rushes. That does not matter even a little bit. I do not understand the galaxy brain of that thought process there. But Elijah Mitchell is one of the running backs available in the quote-unquote dead zone who could be a monster, even especially if they throw it to him a little bit more. But in that system, as the clear number one, if his body holds up, there's a lot of upside. But man, there's a lot of injuries he suffered last year, although he played through a lot of them, and now he's already sidelined all the preseason. So that is a concern. But the rest, and you don't love the fact that there's no clear-cut guy to back him up. From what I gather, the running backs that impress the most is whichever one happens to run behind the starting offensive line that day in practice. I don't know what Jeff Wilson's up to. He's been missing the last couple of weeks. He's the team's best route runner among the running backs. Sermon and Ty Davis Price have both received both hype and some pessimism this offseason. So there's Jordan Mason impressing. So my strategy with the 49ers running backs after Mitchell is take whomever falls latest in that particular draft. And it's fluctuated throughout all of summer.
Yeah, there were times where Ty Davis Price was going earlier than Trey Sermon, and then it kind of sounded like Sermon was rising up, but there's been some, you know, iffy reports of late. I'm fine taking late round stabs, basically, just for the injury upside, because that's the biggest problem with Elijah Mitchell. I also think the ceiling is just kind of capped, too. Like, how does he get into the top 12 at the position, you know, is kind of the biggest thing there. Like, I don't even think that's really within his range of outcomes. If we expect Trey Lance to be taking goal line work, and he's not really going to get a lot of passes either. He's probably a guy that gets you between 900 and 1,000 rushing yards and like 6 touchdowns. Where he goes in the draft, I think there are not other running backs than necessarily. I haven't first ranked among the dead zone backs, but there are just other positions I'd rather draft than Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, he had 1,100 yards in 11 games last year while playing through massive injuries. I mean,
different
offense could be better. I mean, 5.2 yards per carry with Lance playing quarterback. 5.2 yards per carry. That's my counter. But I get it. The guy's always hurt. Always hurt.
Yeah, he's a volatile pick. He's a guy that I don't think we'll make your fantasy season, basically, as long as
I just want to be clear that Shanahan trusts him by far the most.
Yes,
there's no like muddled, Shanahanigans or whatever situation here. He loves Mitchell the best to execute that offense. And then there's a big drop off and a bunch of bodies for the backup.
Yeah, 100%. I think that is that's definitely true. The reasons to fade Elijah Mitchell are there, but I don't think one of them is that like, oh, suddenly Trey Sermon's going to take his job in week four.
Well, they drafted another horrible – they spent another horrible – wasted another third-round pick on a non-athletic back that was unproductive in college. I mean
– yeah. Jordan Mason will be the RB1 by week four. But
I would be less surprised that if Ty Davis Price or Sermon were at this point, frankly.
Yeah, it does sound like that.
No, Mason's definitely looked better than him without question. Without question, he's looked better in the preseason than both those backs with far higher pedigrees.
Yeah, and like we've said, we've seen this story happen before with Elijah Mitchell just last year. So, all right, let's talk about the pass catchers, the fun thing here. I know generally how we feel, but for newer listeners, let's unpack this thing here. We're both big Brandon Ayuk guys. You said a few episodes, like a couple weeks ago, that you give it like a 50-50 chance in terms of who's the best receiver on this roster. Dalton, that's a hot take. Explain yourself.
I'm a Niner guy and a homer here. I think Deebo Samuel is the most egregiously drafted fantasy player right now. I mean, he was some borderline top five fantasy receivers being drafted as, despite not ranking top 50 in routes run or top 25 in targets last year. You think he's going to repeat that eight rushing scores on just 59 attempts? I may complain about the backups behind the 49ers in the running back room, but they're far deeper and far healthier than they were last year, which is why Deebo got those carries. So Ayuk has shown all the chemistry with the new quarterback. So given the new quarterback and just the lack of, I mean, you know that Deebo had never seen more than 81 targets in a season before last year. Long injury history himself. Love Deebo the player after the catch yards beast, yards after catch beast. But it's tough to get targets at the line of scrimmage and then lead the league in yards per catch. I just don't see it happening. Regression coming. And he is just simply projected to not see nearly the same volume as other receivers being drafted around him in fantasy leagues.
Yeah, that's the big thing for me is I eventually banged him down because I just don't think the targets will be there. You need him to kind of have some rushing work. I think the rushing work will be there for Deebo, but it's probably not going to be as much as it was last year. And honestly, that's the thing for me here with Deebo is from a target perspective, weeks 1 through 9, he had 10 targets per game. Weeks 10 through 18, when this was once Brandon Ayuk was like fully out of the doghouse, he had 5 targets per game. He had 6.5 rushes per game. I don't think he's going to have 6.5 rushes per game. He'll probably have, you know, six. I would say he's like a 6 target per game player maybe this year. And that's just not enough for where he's going in drafts. And we just, I know how much of a hot take it sounds like because of the season that Deebo Samuel had last year in fantasy. But I agree with you that it's kind of a 50-50 shot as to who's the better, like, real life receiver here too. Not just fantasy either, but like real life receiver. Deebo is great. He's one of the best zone beating receivers in the NFL. But Ayuk made strides as a player even last year. And he's one of these guys, like I said up top with Jerry Jeudy, where he was at 75.5% success rate versus man in reception perception as a rookie. The guys that do that, the list of players, they go on to be some of the best receivers in the NFL. These guys don't often fail. So, and like you put it on the stat sheet too, was top 20 fantasy receiver from weeks 8 on. And you can get him out easily outside the top 25 receivers, depending on your drafts too. Like you could probably get him outside the top 35 receivers. And I think he's just a smash pick every single time there. Like, unless Trey Lance absolutely sucks. And I don't think he's going to absolutely suck. I don't really see a way that Ayuk fails this year.
Wingspan of Calvin Johnson, quietly among the league leaders in targets inside the 5 over the last 2 years. Even with missing basically the first half of last year, he's just, like I said, laps his teammates Samuel and Kittle when they get inside the 10. So, yeah, all offseason, just highlight after highlight with Trey Lance. I just think the way the area in which the field he runs his routes compared to Deebo and just the chemistry with the new quarterback. I love Ayuk. Admittedly, there's a lot of helium with the reports. He's been a star in camp. His draft cost, his ADP has just soared throughout summer. But, man, I think rightfully so. I love Ayuk. And like I've said, I think there's like a 50-50 chance he has more fantasy points than Deebo Samuel this year. And they've been drafted rounds and rounds apart.
Yeah, I still don't mind Deebo, but he's got to go later than his ADP. I think he's still going to have a good year, and I think he's still a very, very, very good receiver. But I do think Ayuk is the better value at this point. It's just you don't have to take many leaps of faith to buy the optimistic case for Brandon Ayuk, and everybody's rhetoric, like you said, from training camp, coaching staff most important, teammates very important, and of course beat reporters as well. Everybody's been on the same page. Last guy here is George Kittle. Man, you know, I said that the guy that I banged in order to bring Brandon Ayuk up in my projections, which I think absolutely had to happen, the guy I banged the most was Deebo Samuel. But I think that there's a chance George Kittle might be the one out of these three that gets banged this year, right? Like, he's turning 29 in October. He's had injury problems. I think there's a chance that his target totals are just not at all what you want to be for a guy that does consistently get drafted in the top five tight ends.
Yeah, he has, on his range of outcomes, it is fantasy tight end one. I believe he holds the record, or he did, for the most yards in the season by a tight end. But just given his situation, I don't love him for fantasy either. Maybe the best real-life tight end now that Gronk's out of the league with his blocking ability combined. But he's just not used at the goal line, and now there's a question mark at the quarterback position. And also, he's very, very injury-prone. I mean, even last year, he suffered this calf injury week one, and just he may have played, but just wasn't close to the same player, and he's only getting older. So, yeah, I don't love him in fantasy, and I've been the guy drafting Schultz even ahead of him. But I hope he proves me wrong, because there's plenty of upside here. There's just a lot of unknown how he's going to be targeted. But one other guy I want to throw, a couple other guys I want to throw you.
Just one point on Kittle. Like you mentioned, like the year he had his highest yardage total, 1,377 yards. That's just an absolute ton for a tight end. The receivers on that 2018 49ers team, Dante Pettis, LOL, remember how that went. Pierre Garçon, Kendrick Bourne, like Ayuk and Deebo Deebo already is a star level player. And I think this is the year Ayuk joins the star club. I just have a tough time seeing, you know, a guy last year, 94 targets in 14 games. I think there's a chance he could be right around 100 to 90 this year, which is fine, but it just depends on where you're, like, from an overall perspective, where you're drafting. I don't think you can really rank him lower than tight end six. But
definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. I could hear an argument for Dalton Schultz over George Kittle. I personally can't do it, but he can do a lot with a little, George Kittle. Surprisingly, had his career high tight ends touchdowns last year with six. But again, just never a guy that makes it into my draft plans. But who are the other guys on the 49ers you want to talk about?
Yeah, segues well with the competition. It's going to be a run-first team with some competition for targets. But Danny Gray, the rookie, looks like he's going to emerge immediately as a wide receiver three. My guy, Juwan Jennings, is disappointed with drops. And Gray can fly. I think he's 98th percentile in the 40. He also has big hands and is an underrated prospect because he had to tragedy caused him to miss a year of development in high school or first year of college. But he's looked really good throughout summer. And if injuries were to strike, again, a run first team with a lot of targets. So, you know, only if you're in a super deep, I've been taking him in the 20th round of some leagues, but if you're in a really deep league and when injuries strike, Deebo and or Ayuk or Kittle, maybe Gray emerges. And then finally here, the Niners defense, I've ranked number two. They aren't drafted like that at all. They just look loaded to me with a nice schedule opening up, by the way. Even if for the only reason to draft them highly, they start the year against the Bears and then at home against Seattle. But Nick Bosa, I bet on to win defensive player of the year at 15-1, I believe. Saw the most doubled, by far the most doubled teams in the NFL last season, yet still recorded 15 and a half sacks, finished top eight in pass rush win rate, coming off major knee surgery, much deeper SF line now. Have you seen the Javon Kinlaw? Just looks, dude is built different. And also don't hate the Drake Jackson at 33-1 to win rookie of the year, defensive player of the year there too. But again, I might be something of a homer.
Perhaps. I think you have basically everybody except Deebo ranked ahead of ADP. No, I'm just
not Kittle. No, Kittle.
Not Kittle. Yeah, not Kittle. But I like your call about Danny Gray. Somebody to remember, caught a big touchdown from Trey Lance the preseason. And yeah, it's all about a guy like Ayuk who can win deep and outside the numbers. A guy like Danny Gray who can stretch the field out as well. The key thing for the Niners here is this offense is going to look different. It's not your dad's 49ers anymore. It's not even your older brother's 49ers anymore. This team is very different. And they're one of the teams I can't wait to watch. I mean, I know that we've been in the bag for the 49ers. Obviously, you're a real fan. I'm I don't even know what I am. But I really love the players here, and I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, Garoppolo's still on the roster as we speak, which is crazy. Trey Lance, I mean, such an unknown, the biggest wild card of the 2022 NFL season. And who knows? I mean, suddenly it'd be Nate Studfeld might be starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. But it's a team with a wide range of outcomes, but certainly a lot of upside, both in real life and in fantasy.
All right, man. I feel like we could talk another 30 minutes about the Niners, but that is going to do it for us. You can follow Dalton on Twitter at Dalton Del Don. You can follow me at Matt Harmon underscore BYB. And while you're there, make sure you're following at Yahoo Fantasy. Hey, leave us like a 5-star review, huh? How about that? Like, I don't shill for reviews enough now that I'm hosting this podcast. I guess I got to start doing that too. Leave us reviews. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you like about the podcast. And if you don't like it, just tell me directly on Twitter and don't leave it in the review. How about that? All right, Frank Schwab will be back tomorrow for a jam-packed show where we preview both the Super Bowl champion LA Rams and everybody's favorite fantasy offense, the Kansas City Chiefs. Until then, we're out.